Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We go up until 7 o'clock, full show today. And then remember, we're at Trivia 7:30 to 9:30 City Sports Grill out in Colchester. We've been doing it for a couple of months now. It's been a blast every single time. The weather is good. Come on out. And like I said, please, the bosses are coming today. The big wigs are coming out tonight. So come out, make us look good. I'm hosting, so let's get a big crowd. Arnie and Rich will be there, too. I'm making sure that Rich goes. I'm dragging him out, too.
Even, I guess I know what I'm doing now.
That's right. You know exactly what you're doing. You're coming to City Sports Grill. So we'll have a ton of prizes, a lot of swag, and we'll have half-price burgers and a lot of fun, as always. So we'll see you there, 7:30 to 9:30. Coming up later on the station, college basketball, Villanova, and Seton Hall. Nova, at one point, number one in the country. Seton Hall, also one of the one of the darlings as we head towards March. You know what's funny? Before I tell you what's coming up in the show, it's not so much funny, it is ironic. So yesterday I started off the show with the rant about how I hate when schools and when fan bases storm the court in college basketball when I feel it's unwarranted. And I feel it's unwarranted when, one, you're already a good, when, one, you're a good team, and two, you're playing at home, and three, you're playing against a team in your own league. I mean, that is, Virginia Tech is the example I used yesterday. Virginia Tech beat Duke at home, and I said, why on earth would Virginia Tech storm the court after beating Duke? They were 21-9. They were 14-4 at home. They've been to the NCAA tournament last season. They're in the same conference, so therefore, similar funding, similar recruiting budgets, similar facilities. You should expect to win that game. It's ironic because I was going through Facebook today, and a lot of you, you know, it's not quite as popular as it was a year ago, but one of the big features on Facebook is called the On This Day feature. And you see, what exactly did you post, or what pictures did you post, or who did you become friends with on that date in preceding years? So on February 28th of 2013, before I was even in radio, I had a Facebook rant about the exact same scenario where I wrote 5 years ago today, Virginia has 20 wins. They have 10 wins in the ACC, which is just one less than Duke. Really, with the court storming? Question mark. So Virginia had beaten Duke, and I said, Virginia has 20 wins. They have 10 wins in the ACC, which is one less than Duke. Really, with the court storming? Exactly. And look at what's happened to Virginia. They should expect to win that kind of game then. I went back and did the research. They were even favored in Vegas in that game. Their fans stormed the court for a game that they were the favorite in. Virginia also has gone on to be the number one seed in the NCAA tournament multiple times and is now number one in the country. Like, that's what programs are building towards. And intern Nathan's in here nodding his head along because he missed what I said yesterday about this. And so I'll direct this at you. Your program is not a grown-up program if you think it's so unbelievably amazing that you've beaten a team in your own league. If you have beaten a team in your own league at home, that should be the expectation, not the outlier. It's really pathetic when teams in their own conference have to storm the court. Like Wisconsin earlier this year, Wisconsin's having a down year. Wisconsin beat Michigan State, and they beat them at home. Now, Wisconsin's having a poor year. Michigan State was in the top five. But you know what? Wisconsin went to the Final Four just a few years ago. Wisconsin has NBA lottery picks getting drafted. When you look at Sam Decker and when you look at Frank Kaminsky, they've got a Hall of Fame coach in Bo Ryan who recently retired. Like, Wisconsin is a good program, a really good program. You should be able to win at home on your home court within your own league. Like, if 3-18 upsets Kentucky, then fine. Storm the court all you want if you're fortunate enough to get that game at home. Or if you win on a buzzer beater at the tournament, I don't really care how much you celebrate. But you should be able to win home games against teams in your own league. That should be an expectation, not an outlier. And I mentioned that I've had this take forever, And I like court storming. Like, I'm fond of the romanticism that comes with court storming. But at least let it be warranted. It's not warranted when it's a team in your own league. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. If you want to get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, you can. 802-655-6672. Andrew in Ferrisburg says, this was coming up. This was at the end of the huddle. Shane in Burlington said that Rich is going to complain he's never seen Seinfeld because we were talking about it. Rich has never seen anything, apparently. Anything that's any fun, Rich has never seen unless it's sports. And, man, I don't watch movies. Like, my movie knowledge is pretty darn pathetic. But if it's sport, you know, even I've seen, you know, Seinfeld, Friends, The Big Bang Theory, The Departed. I've seen some things that you should see. Rich has seen nothing. So, Champlain Valley Game Night, what's coming up today on the show in about 60 seconds from now, former RPI hockey coach and Team USA coach now for the 18-under national team, Seth Appert, is going to stop by and join us, and he's always fun to talk to. Could a potential rule change have big impact on the Patriots? Hint, hint, the answer is yes. We'll get into that in about 15, 20 minutes. Eugene Santos, athletic trainer at UVM, will stop by at 6:40, but at about 6:30 we'll talk more about the prospective protests on the at the UVM basketball game coming up this weekend, 7 o'clock against Maine, exclusive to 101.3 ESPN. We have learned that there are planned demonstrations at that game. So we'll talk about that. We'll take your texts. So formulate your thoughts. We'll all be respectful. We'll have a rational conversation. But now let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves a guy who I know pretty well from my time working out in Albany. It's Seth Appert, former RPI hockey coach. Spent 11 years there as the head coach. Now he's the head coach for the under-18 national team for Team USA Hockey. And, Coach, we're talking about UVM, and we're talking about Catamounts getting ready to play UMass in the upcoming Hockey East tournament. That starts tomorrow. But first, Seth Appert, how are you?
I'm doing great, Brady. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you joining us. Let me talk about this. All those years at RPI, did you ever get to play UVM? Any experiences up at Gutterson Fieldhouse?
Yeah, we did. Not as much as I'd like. It's funny, Coach Sneddon and I had been working on trying to get non-conference agreements going forward as well. But we have played up there. I was an assistant coach at Denver. We came out and played there once as well. And, you know, it's one of the great barns in all of college hockey. It's just a great fan base, great atmosphere, tough building to play in. And so, yeah, absolutely a lot of good memories from the Gutterson Fieldhouse.
Let me ask you, what's the hardest part of coaching college hockey? UVM having a down year from fans' expectations, just 9 wins, but they play in arguably the best conference in the country. What makes coaching college hockey so difficult?
I think that what's hard right now is the balance of the recruiting of the young guys, because the, you know, you're recruiting 9th and 10th graders right now, and then also recruiting, you know, 20-year-olds to come in and help you for that coming year. So that balance, and then balancing the guys that are leaving early. So many players now are not, of the elite players, aren't 4-year players anymore. And so they're, you know, you think you have a program-changing player or two coming in, and maybe they're only there for 1 or 2 years now, and sometimes don't have the impact on your program while there because they're not there for the whole duration.
Yeah.
I think those decisions can hurt more programs a little bit more that are considered maybe more mid-major type programs. You lose 1 or 2 of those type of kids at you know, more of the mid-major type programs. Those are harder to replace than maybe it is at a Boston College to replace a player like that.
How difficult, you mentioned recruiting, how difficult is the recruiting at the Division I level? I picture hockey recruiting to be so tough because there's not as many kids playing in the United States as you would say basketball or baseball. You've got to go to Canada and overseas, you know, Finland, all these other places. It just seems so difficult.
It is a lot, because you're covering a lot of the world, and you're covering a lot of areas. You know, like you hear about in football or basketball that most of some of the elite teams, most of their recruits are coming from a 3, 4, 5 state area right around that school. Well, that's just not going to work in hockey. You know, Boston College, Boston University used to be like that. You couldn't have an all New England team at those places and be successful anymore because the game is so spread out. And so that part of it's difficult. And then I think certainly the challenge in college hockey recruiting is that we have two entities going against us a little bit. You have major junior hockey in Canada for some of the elite young players, especially Canadians, choose the major junior route instead of the college route. But then you also then have the NHL signing our players early. So, you know, where in baseball, a player might sign after his senior in high school and leave and go pro, but if he goes to college, he's going for 3 years. That's the rule. Well, that's not the case in hockey, and so a player can leave at any time. Even in the middle of the season, he could leave and go play major junior. So it's such a fluctuating situation in the recruiting market right now that it does make it difficult.
You know, it was a bad week for, it's been a bad last week for college basketball at the Division I level. We've heard about just how sleazy recruiting can be, but we've never heard anything like that in hockey. Is it a much different dynamic in hockey?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that in hockey. I've never seen anything. The only thing I've seen in hockey would be maybe talking to a player or a family earlier from an age perspective than you're supposed to talk to them. Other than that, I've never seen anything that I would consider inappropriate or against NCAA rules. College hockey coaches, hockey people in general are great people. There's a lot of ethics. There's a lot of camaraderie. There's a lot of loyalty. College hockey recruiting is competitive, but it's certainly not scandalous from a perspective of those types of things. And some of it, I think some of it's the culture of the sport, and I think some of it, you know, is that, you know, there's certainly less money. There is money in college hockey, but there's certainly less money in college hockey than there is in college football or college basketball.
Seth Appert, he's with Team USA Hockey, but before that, former head coach at RPI, spent 11 years there. He's with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. You know, Coach, one of the cool things that I've known about your program at RPI was you guys were really big into sports psychology, and you worked with a guy named Brian Kane, and Brian Kane is one of my most favorite people in sports, and we're actually working to get him on the show next week. He's a UVM graduate, and he played baseball up at UVM, so a lot of people around here know his name, too. What was it like working with him, and what did he do for your program in college?
Yeah, I love Kaner. I still stay in touch with him. I think he's the best sports psychologist that I've seen or been around or heard or worked with. Because it's less kumbaya, touchy feely stuff, and it's more hard, competitive edge stuff. And I think that's what really helps players, and I think that's what resonates with players. And so what he was really good with is he's really good at getting players to limit outside distractions, limit outside noise that's coming in, taking away from their daily routines and their daily habits. And then he's really good at getting you dialed in on controlling what you can control and following the process that you have as a player and as a team to be successful. So I think that I think it's harder in hockey than it is in other sports because the free-flowing nature of hockey in football or in baseball, every play stops and then restarts again. And so you have more opportunity to go through your checklist, so to speak, or your reset buttons, where hockey's a little bit trickier in that regard. But certainly it was very beneficial for our program and our players. And I think it's extremely beneficial for goaltenders because that is certainly the one position that, is more mental anyway. And also, there is those pauses, that they can kind of go through their checklist and get resetted.
Coach, I want to ask you about this. As I said, you're working with Team USA Hockey, and I was watching the Olympics, the last 2 or 3 weeks or so, and Team USA had, I want to say, 4 current college players. As a former college coach, how invasive would it be for your program to have your best players leave in the middle of the season and go play in the Olympics? I mean, it's a great honor for the players, but it's not necessarily great for your program. How would you have balanced that?
Oh, it's a no-brainer. And we're used to it in college because the World Juniors is in the middle of the season as well, so it's over that New Year's time. So college hockey is used to releasing some of their best players for certain periods of time to whether it's the United States or other countries that they're representing. So It's not out of the norm. It's a little later in the season this year, so that made it a little trickier because now you're into that playoff type push. But I think college coaches at heart, we're supposed to be, and we should be, educators at heart, mentors at heart. And if we take that hat and put it on for one of your guys to have the opportunity to represent their country and play in the Olympics and be part of that, it's an absolute no-brainer, and you'd be thrilled for them.
Now, you're coaching the under 18 U.S. national team right now. Just because I'm hockey naive, all of your players, pretty much your whole roster, is committed to play in college. Are they going to go right to college as 18-year-old freshmen, or are they going to go play juniors first and then go to college?
Yeah, no, most of the guys from here go right in because it doesn't mean it's always the right decision to do that, but most go right in. I'd say it's either because they're ready physically, because these guys are trained hard here, or they're ready from a game perspective because of they do play 2 years in the USHL. We play a part USHL schedule, a part college schedule, and a part international schedule. So our guys this year at the 18 level will play about 30 USHL games, which is the best junior league in North America. They'll play about 16 or 17 NCAA games, and then they'll play about 17 or 18 international games. So if they're ready from that regard. And then obviously these are, some of the most, if not the most talented players in our country. So that makes them ready as well. I'd say probably 85% of them will go right in. Maybe, three or four on our team will maybe go for an extra year of juniors, to develop a little bit further.
When are we going to get some of them coming to the University of Vermont? I look down the roster. I see a lot of Boston College, Boston University, Wisconsin commits. When are we going to get a Catamount on your team?
Yeah, that's a heck of a point. These guys, well, this is my first year here. When I got here, these guys were all committed for probably 2 years in advance. So maybe the 2002s that are coming in next year, that I'll rotate down and coach the 2002s for 2 years, and they'll show up in the fall. So maybe we can get a Catamount. And I know they had Paliotta was a big defenseman that was at the program that played for the Catamounts. Was a heck of a player for them. So. But it is. It's as you mentioned. It's a lot of the what you'd call the big boys from a name perspective. Because I think when elite players are making decisions at 15, those names sound a little more appealing than sometimes other programs do. And so you do see a lot of Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, BU, BC type of commits in our program.
Seth Appert, former head coach at RPI, 11 years there, won a couple of national championships as an assistant at Denver, and now Team USA Hockey, the head coach of the under 18 national team. Seth, we appreciate the time, the perspective, the insight, and we'll talk to you again down the line.
Great. It's always good to be on, and good luck to Coach Ned and the Catamounts this weekend.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Seth Appert. Catamounts taking on UMass starts tomorrow. Hockey East playoffs down year for UVM overall. But, man, it's interesting to hear what the world of college coaching is like for hockey, because it's something I have no idea about, right? Like, I've never played hockey. Like, I have some idea about college baseball because I was in it. I have an idea of college basketball because I have friends in it. I have an idea of college football because I have friends in it. But I don't know anybody who coaches college hockey, really, outside of Kevin Snedden and Seth Appert personally. So it's fun to get that. Good to hear that college hockey recruiting is cleaner than college basketball, at least from his perspectives. If you want to weigh in on that interview, you can always get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. And I also love the part about Brian Kane. And Brian Kane is a guy that I bring up a lot because Brian Kane, sports psychologist, mental conditioning coach, they call it, is arguably, as he said, one of the best at his profession. And he's a guy that he's from Vermont. He's from Massachusetts originally, but he's played at UVM. He was an athletic director in Vermont. I want to say at St. Johnsbury, if I'm not mistaken, or Mount Mansfield, one of the two. And now he's working, with Ultimate Fighting Champions and Major League teams. He's out with the Texas Rangers right now. We're trying to get him on next week, but his schedule is so booked that it may have to be a little bit because he's so good at what he does. And it's cool to hear somebody who's revered like Brian Kane to know that he came through UVM and that he was an athletic director here at the local high school ranks. So always good, though, to talk with Seth Appert. Time for Tire Text Line coming in. Also, Harry in St. George responding to my early rant. Did Virginia win the ACC regular season with the best record that year? It has been a long time, Harry in St. George. I don't remember. I don't remember about 5 years ago. So possible, but doubtful. If they weren't, because I don't remember if they were ranked, but I remember they were ranked, but Duke would have been number five. They were certainly not ahead of Duke at that time. Coming up next, a possible NFL rule change could have big-time impact on the New England Patriots. What's that rule? It's next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Wednesday. Remember, trivia tonight. As soon as the show ends, I'm heading over City Sports Grill, 7:30 to 9:30. So come on, hang out. We've had great turnouts, great turnouts. The bosses are coming today, so let's get another great turnout for us here tonight also. The questions are, I'm told they're dumbed down because apparently they were too hard last week. So Arnie's wife made them easier, so that'll be fun. Heading out at trivia. Always love City Sports Grill. Half-price burgers and all the games on all the televisions. Looking forward to that. The NFL might make a rule change that has a massive impact on the Patriots, offense and defense. Let's start with the offense. The NFL might make pass interference a 15-yard penalty rather than a spot foul. And that is, I think most of us would agree, is good for the NFL. It's not fun for us to watch our team play great defense and then have some, you know, have some quarterback throw it 50 yards down the field and have some incidental contact result in a 50-yard penalty. None of us want that. I hate seeing my team scored upon because of just chunk flags. Most of us agree that limiting pass interference calls would be good for the league. Now, we can argue, do you think it should be a spot foul or a 15-yard penalty? What does that encourage down the field? Regardless of that, if they make this rule change and if pass interference becomes a 15-yard penalty, this has a massive impact on the Patriots' offense and defense. Let's start with the offense first, though. Get this. No team converted more first downs via penalties this year than the Patriots. No team recorded more automatic first downs this year than the Patriots. And no team gained more yards on defensive pass interference than the Patriots. No team gained more yards on defensive PI, 355 yards of offense this season for the Patriots. No one had more than that. And why is that a big deal to the offense? Because this is going to change the offense. And I don't want to be this is not a hot take. I studied this. I really believe this. The Patriots, we all talk about how disciplined they are, about how well coached they are, about how they prepare for every situation. Don't think for a second that Patriot wide receivers don't know how to initiate contact, take contact, flop when there's contact, look for contact, complain to the ref about contact. Don't think they're not prepared for that. They are well-schooled in every discipline of football under Bill Belichick. So they're good at creating contact. They're good at – Brady's good at throwing the ball short, anticipating contact. I mean, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Ramsey, AFC Championship game, none of us thought that was a flag. Patriots knew it was a flag. They trained for that kind of situation specifically in those kind of plays. So Tom Brady was throwing deep balls more so than ever before this year. At one point this year, he was throwing the ball deep at the highest percentage of his career. If now you're going to tell us, because when you throw the ball deep, there's really four options that can happen. One, you're going to catch it, favorable to the offense. One, two, it's going to get knocked down. And so, okay, still generally favorable to the offense. You retain possession, you have the next down. Three, pass interference, positive to the offense. And four, it gets picked. So out of four possible outcomes, three of them are beneficial. Well, now, if we're not going to call PI or PI is going to become a 15-yard penalty, it no longer becomes beneficial for me to throw the ball deep down the field. So, because now you take away the lengthy PI option, now it becomes 50-50. It becomes a total crapshoot as to what's going to happen. You know, if you throwing it really deep consistently comes out in your favor. So
teams are going to have to change their offense. If the Patriots were throwing so deep last year, they're going to have to take some shots out of their playbook. And that is not beneficial to their offense. What else is it going to do? It's going to mean if throwing the ball deep is no longer as beneficial, you're going to see teams run the ball more. And the running the ball is not a Patriots strength. Although I like their overall collection of backs way more than Arnie ever did, the running game for them was not a huge strength this year. They didn't rely on it. They didn't even really cultivate it that much. And they were banged up in that running game through various parts of the year. Gillislee was hurt, didn't play ineffective. White was hurt, didn't play ineffective. Burkhead was hurt, didn't play. Deion Lewis, more of a pass catcher. I mean, so you're going to see the offense change for the Patriots. One, throwing the ball deep, not as beneficial. Two, with that being the case, more teams are going to run. If the Patriots have to do that, they are not as well equipped to run. And it could totally change their draft strategy. It could totally change their free agent prerogatives. So this has a major impact. Also, I mean, teams got to sign Brandon Cooks long term, right? Well, what if they also now need to go and get a bruising running back because now running is going to become more advantageous than some of these deep passes? If you want to get in, agree, disagree, or the otherwise, 802-655-6672, Town Fair Tire text line. More than welcome to get in there. But on the defensive side, this is a great thing for the Patriots. Okay? It's a great thing on the surface because it's just good for defenses in general. No team allowed fewer first downs by penalty than the Patriots. So they were disciplined under the rules where you call everything. Now, what's going to happen when you allow a little more hand fighting, when you allow a little more contact and it's not everything being called for PI? Only two teams were flagged for fewer defensive pass interference calls than the Patriots. Patriots had six PI penalties all season. Now, if you're going to take PI down to just 15 yards, like, they were good when it was a spot foul penalty. How good are they going to be when it's just a 15-yard penalty? I think that's something that remains to be seen. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Getting a couple texts in right now, Milo in North Troy. I'll say again what I said the other day, Brady. If I'm a defender and the pass is over 20 yards, I'm just going to tackle the offensive player. And that is the biggest concern. That is the 100% biggest concern about changing pass interference. And I'm with you, Milo. That is very real. But what we can't have is chunk offensive plays being given by penalty. We just can't have it. I can't watch it anymore. Just throw it up with a prayer and hope for a flag is not an offense. That has become an offense. I can't watch that anymore. Maybe we call more illegal contact penalties to keep the hand checking to a minimum. In fact, that's probably going to be a byproduct of this. But I'm in favor of less 40-yard plays by penalties. Real quick, let's have a rational conversation. 802-655-6672, Town Fair Tire text line or the TikTok Jewelers guest line. At about 3 o'clock today, 101.3 ESPN received exclusive information that there are going to be possible and probable protests at the University of Vermont this Saturday for UVM men's basketball's conference tournament opener against Maine. It's going to be a combination of student-led groups and community members. They would be wearing Black Lives Matter shirts at the game. They would be kneeling for the anthem. Anything beyond that is unknown. I have heard since then that there is a mix of faculty involved in this cause as well. I do not think the protest should happen at the UVM game. And that's not because I'm against the First Amendment. That's not because I'm against the cause of the students or the community activists. I think what you think about their cause, what you think about Black Lives Matter, what you think about the situation on campus or in the community, I think that's really irrelevant here. This is not the time or place for the protest to occur in my mind. And you're more than welcome to get in as long as we have a rational discussion. Again, 802-655-6672. From what I know about these protests, and I've been watching the news and following the Burlington Free Press like a lot of you have, the student-led protests, I cannot speak to the community protesters. If townspeople come out and join them, I cannot speak to them. So I'm looking at the student protesters first right now. Student protesters have a list of demands that they have given to campus personnel, things that they want to see change on campus. Well, the UVM men's basketball games are not populated by a general campus community. That is more of a local event. There are more townspeople there that will not understand what they are fighting for. If they want change on campus, then going to a place where the population and fandom is going to be more community-based is not going to resonate. Yes, the media will be there. Yes, I'm sure that academic dignitaries will be at the game. So if you're looking to get the message out over the media, then fine. You're right about that. That's an opportunity and a good one. But if you're looking to have a campus uprising about this and gain support as a campus, you are not going to be in the majority. There is not going to be overwhelming support, I don't think, because most of the people in Patrick Gym have no connection to campus. They don't go there. They don't have a kid that goes there. They don't have a grandparent that goes there. They never went there, or if they did go there, they went there in the past when they had a different experience than you're having now. I think, look, I have nothing against protesting. It's the right of the Constitution. College campuses are always protesting something. It's what college kids do. They're trying to change the world for the better, and they should be applauded for that in a lot of cases. But I don't think this venue, this forum, is where they're going to hit a home run with their message, because they are going to be limited in terms of the support that they can get, because a lot of people just aren't going to understand. If you're fighting for change on campus, you're not going to get that by accruing support from townspeople. We're not on campus. I don't know what's going on there every day. I don't know how you are treated, or that guy's treated, or this guy's treated, or that student's treated. And I think that's going to be tough to overcome. And I feel bad for the team that's going to be put in the middle, because they're going to be playing the game. If things are happening in the crowd, they're just stuck in the middle. And the fact that their games garner high attention, they're being used as a prop. They're being used as propaganda to get this message out. And I feel bad for them because they can't speak up for themselves, because they're going to be playing. They can't get their message out. They can't take, you know, they can't take a side that they want to take. And that's unfortunate. They're going to be in the middle of this whole thing with no control over it. And I feel bad for them. I have zero problem with students protesting on campus. I have zero problem with people, human beings, fighting for what they believe in. But I don't believe that this is the right forum this Saturday night, 7 p.m. 802-655-6672. Big Dave says they should be protesting at the Waterman building. It's a building on campus. How many seats could they buy? The game is sold out. I know that this group bought some tickets. And again, if they're paying customers and they're in the gym wearing T-shirts kneeling for the anthem, I don't think there's a whole lot of resentment that can be given. Now, we don't have to like that they would kneel for the anthem. You don't have to like that. But they're paying customers. They're not doing anything wrong. They would not be doing anything wrong. As far as what goes on, you know, if they're outside the building, that's all up for a different discussion. I'm talking about what goes on in the game itself. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We're moments away from Eugene Santos, who's going to join us on the other side of the break. He's the athletic trainer at UVM. We got Nathan working the phone, so we'll wait for him. We'll see if we can take a phone call here real quick before the break. But again, Eugene Santos waiting for us on the other side. I think Saturday is going to be interesting. A lot more interesting than a 1-8 game is slated to be. If there ends up being more than basketball, I hope everyone is respectful. Let's see, we got a phone call. We got Carol on the line. Carol, you're on Champlain Valley Game Night. What's going on, Carol?
Hey, Brady, it's Carol, your nurse.
Oh, my nurse from when I hit my head.
Yeah.
Yes, my nurse from when I hit my head. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I've been listening, and, you know, I very rarely, if ever, have called in. I think I've called in one time. But I have to say I agree with you. I think it's the wrong venue for the protest that's not to do with sports. has nothing to do with sports.
Yeah.
Let's let sports be sports. Let's let people enjoy. Let's let the athletes enjoy their time. They have such limited time in college to be athletes. Let's let them enjoy being college athletes. And I agree with you. I think that this is certainly an issue that's important. And Black lives do matter. All lives matter. But it has nothing to do with sports.
Carol, I appreciate the call, and thank you for taking care of my head injury.
Oh, I hope you're feeling better.
Thank you, Carol. I appreciate it. That was Carol on the TikTok Jewelers Guest Line. And again, about it not mattering, about it not dealing with sports, it's one thing when people protest their government. It's one thing when people protest the president. Those people make decisions that affect lives, and they affect your life deliberately. These basketball players on UVM or Maine, they're not responsible for what's going on campus here or at any other campus. So, look, I think student protesters' hearts are often in the right place, but you have to get the message out in the proper forum, and I don't think Saturday night is it. We'll continue to take your text on the Town for Tire text line, but when we come back, Eugene Santos, athletic trainer for the successful UVM men's basketball team. We'll go back on the court with the Cats next, Champlain Valley Game Night.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is Wednesday, and we just talked about UVM and what is certainly a controversial topic about the perspective and possible protest at this Saturday's America East Conference tournament opener against Maine. Let's focus now on the Catamounts on the floor and what's made them so successful. And certainly what that is that they just have great players and great coaching, but also a great support staff behind the system. We've talked to a lot of them throughout the year. We talked to grad assistant coach Derek O'Grady yesterday. We've talked to people from the sports information department. Now let's talk to somebody on the athletic training side of things, and let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves the UVM men's basketball team athletic trainer, but also works with track and field and cross country for the Cats. It's Eugene Santos. Eugene, how are you?
Great. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Well, Eugene, I appreciate you coming on, and you as the athletic trainer for the Catamounts certainly are integral to the team's success. And we saw Anthony Lamb make his return yesterday, and no doubt you were pretty fixated on that over the last couple of months in trying to get Anthony back onto the court. So kind of set the stage for us. How did you end up at UVM?
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of wild story, I guess. You know, I've been pretty fortunate to have a lot of help and good people around me kind of helping me get to where I am. And, you know, kind of started off with just my time figuring out what I wanted to do in life. You know, you go through that phase of figuring out what your interests are and before college, and then found my way into athletic training, sports medicine, and really got hooked in college. And then, you know, a great GA position for me at Eastern Kentucky University kind of worked out, where it was kind of a diamond in the rough, I called it, and really found myself with a great experience there and working with some really good teams and around a really good network of alumni that. Then after that, as I was applying, you know, Vermont basketball opened up, and I was like, great, you know, this looks like a exciting thing, really good step, a big step, and then things kind of worked out from there, and I've been pretty grateful and lucky to be a part of things and, you know, be a part of everything that this program's done.
Now, you worked with the baseball and women's basketball teams at Eastern Kentucky up here, basketball in addition to cross country and track and field, so you got a couple of different disciplines of sport there that you've got to be acutely aware of. Is there one sport that you prefer working with or one sport that you work better with?
No, you know, I wouldn't say that there's, you know, one better versus the other. I think, you know, each sport you work with is a little different, even going back to some of the things I did as a student and even other experiences I've had. You know, each sport you work is a little different, brings its own set of challenges, and it's a great opportunity to kind of learn the sports you're working with, understand those athletes, because, I mean, at the end of the day, as an athletic trainer, your goal is to connect with those student athletes and understand their sport, understand what drives them to get better, understand, you know, when stuff comes up, what those limitations are, but how to coach them in a sense of overcoming that and working back in. So, you know, like here at Vermont, I work with men's basketball and then split track and field cross country with, you know, some of my great staff members. And I mean, each, you know, both teams present different challenges with, you know, basketball. You get some more acute things that happen, you know, and then with the other sports, track and field, cross country, you got some overuse things, but it's just, it really forces you to read up and keep your knowledge base strong, understand the sport. And it's, I don't know, it presents a really cool opportunity to kind of keep a broad lens and really look at, you know, not just one sport and get tunnel vision. Sometimes you really kind of look at the athlete as a whole, and it's a pretty cool challenge and a great thing to be a part of.
How much of a collaborative effort is it for you throughout the year in relation to the teams? I have to imagine, you know, you're talking with not only the coaching staff, but also the strength and conditioning staff, seeing which athletes can do what, which athletes should gear towards this or that. I got to imagine it's a pretty cooperative effort.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I think one of the things that drew me to Vermont was the relationship with the athletic performance area, strength and conditioning coach, you know, in this particular case, Mark Hickok, and that relationship, working with the coaches, and then even what it's like amongst our staff, you know, like some places it varies based on how many staff members they have, team positions, this and that. Here in Vermont, I'm actually very fortunate to have a great team position, you know, and actually group of physicians that help us out, a great staff where we kind of collaborate and help each other out, like no matter what our sport assignments are. And then even when you talk about, you know, basketball, track and field, cross country, and then looking at the athletic performance piece, I mean, collaboration's huge. I think one of the things that I pride myself in is being able to work well with, you know, say Mark Hickok in this case, of he and I talking about, hey, you know, this is what our plan is, or we're working someone to get back. He and I bounce ideas off each other to kind of fill in those gaps from, you know, say when an injury happens or something's going on, to then, you know, meeting those demands to be able to withstand being on the court, bouncing off people, you know, all everything that kind of comes into play with that. I mean, collaboration's huge. I think, you know, if you can be a little one-sided at times, you know, you kind of lose focus of different things. I think there have been times where Mark's been able to say to me, hey, you know, why don't we try some of this? And I'm like, yeah, actually, yeah, they're ready for that. I like that idea. Let's do that. And I think you learn to trust each other and bring, you know, you kind of bring something to the table. And then that really helps out when you're looking at working with the coaching staff, of working people back of, hey, this is what people can do, or this is what they've done already. It really makes a huge difference to be able to work collaboratively with everyone. And, you know, in the end, you're benefiting the player as a student athlete. So it's kind of the big goal of it all, you know, no matter wins, losses, you're really looking at just providing the best you can for student athletes.
Eugene Santos, athletic trainer for the University of Vermont, with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I got to add, this might be an unfair question, but I think back to my college experience, and I was a Division III athlete, played for 4 years on the baseball team, and we had two trainers for the entire athletic department. And I thought, man, their job is really hard because, number one, how do they have time to see everybody? And number two, they've got to have every sport. And then I look at you and I say, okay, you're working with less sports, but you're working with sports that are competing at really high levels for really high stakes. Which one is more pressure? Being able to be, you know, the only guy to do everything, or work with one or two programs that are at really high stakes?
You know, each level you're at brings its own set of challenges. I think, you know, I really give a lot of credit to the athletic trainers that work at, you know, some of those different levels, or in high school situations where it's just them for every sport, or, you know, being the only point person to work between the athletic department coaches and then the student athletes. You know, I think, like I said, it kind of brings its own set of challenges. I don't know that one's harder than the other. I think you're just dealing with, you know, some different things. I think coverages can be different, or, you know, you learn how to balance your loads a little different. But then also when you have the resources there, you know, the pressures and demands you feel might be a little different because there's more there to kind of pick from. But, I mean, I really give credit to all the other athletic trainers that are in a variety of settings, and even other Division I schools. You know, I mean, when you're at a higher level, sometimes that helps you out because you have a little more at your fingertips. But, you know, again, it kind of has its own set of challenges no matter where you're at. You know, in some cases, the athletic trainer is also a strength and conditioning coach and kind of, you know, wearing both hats in that sense. So each place you go kind of brings its own unique challenge, and you kind of learn to adapt and do what you have to.
How often do you have to protect an athlete from themselves? I can imagine basketball player has a twisted ankle. Coach says he should stay out a day. You say he should stay out a day, but he wants to get back out there and play. How often you got to tell the athlete to relax and protect them from themselves?
You know, here and there, I think it really comes down to learning the student athlete, kind of learning who you're working with. You know, you get people in all different sports that some want to be right back out there, and you got to say, hey, no, like, that's not the case, and you got to learn to explain to them why and teach them about kind of what's going on and, you know, kind of have a clear lens looking big picture at times. And there's other times you got to say, you know, no, it is okay. This is going to be okay. Here's the reasons why. Everyone's on board, and you go from there. I mean, you know, there are a lot of cases where sometimes you have to just learn to pull the reins back, but then ultimately, you know, the health and safety and well-being of the student-athletes kind of the priority, and, you know, making sure that they can be out there, do the activity that they love. I think that really, you know, that's high up there too, but making sure that they're safe and they can do everything appropriately is kind of the goal. And once you explain that and explain the long-term goals to them, most people tend to buy in.
How does your schedule work when there's crossover in the seasons? I mean, there's some crossover for you between cross country and basketball, between basketball and track and field, especially as basketball starts earlier and seems and plays later every single year. How does that work? Because your time is valuable in the first place, but then you get stretched real thin.
Yeah, you know, I have a terrific staff, like I said before, of other athletic trainers, you know, team physicians, a lot of people that really kind of help out, and we really look out for each other. So throughout the year, as seasons come and go, we really try to help each other out. With track and field and cross country specifically, there's two other athletic trainers, Lisa and Emily, that we all work together to help, you know, kind of offset loads throughout the different seasons. And I think it works out pretty well, where in the fall when things are a little lighter, you know, basketball's picking up and covering them, you know, doing that. But you just learn to balance your schedule, you know. Fortunately, practice times vary, so, you know, you just learn to balance your schedule specific times for people to come in to get things done, and you kind of go from there. And once things are picking up and I'm hitting the road, you know, that's where Lisa tends to step in, really help out and pick up a lot of the load. And then come springtime here, we kind of transition back to making it a little easier on everyone. It just comes down to communicating and really, you know, working with the coaches. And, you know, you do put long hours in, you put longer days, but it's really, you know, when you love what you do, you don't even think twice about it.
Eugene Santos, he's the athletic trainer for the UVM men's basketball team, also cross country and track and field at UVM here on Champlain Valley Game Night. Eugene, man, I appreciate the time. And like I said, you worked with baseball, and between 4 years of playing college ball, summer ball, and between another 5 years since then of playing men's league ball without proper stretching, hopefully we're good enough friends now I can come see you for a shoulder opinion, because I know it's not good, Eugene.
I mean, you know, at this point in time, you might want to get into, like, underhand softball or something.
Oh, don't tell me that. No, don't tell me that one. No,
I'm just teasing, but no, it's, you know, a lot of good experiences, and it's pretty funny, you know, amongst my staff, a lot of us have baseball experience, so it's kind of funny to look at, you know, the foundation of everyone and kind of the roots that we come from and all kind of connect on having worked baseball at some point and, you know, really enjoying those experiences and kind of what it teaches you.
Well, you know, like I said, I won't go to underhand softball, but eventually it might just be underhand baseball, because the fastball has gone from like mid-80s to now I think I probably couldn't hit 77 if I tried.
That's what a DH is for, right?
That's right. Hey, Eugene, we appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. The producers are mad at me. I went way over the time today, but it was a full show. You miss any of it, you can find it at 1013ESPN.com. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.